Joint TB-HIV Services in Low-Income Settings. I'm Paula Fujiwara from the International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease, your host of this conference, and also a medical officer with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I'm joined here by my colleague, Professor Martin Niafon from Benin, and he will join me in these presentations. Everyone who's coming in and who's also sitting, please have your, what do you call these things here? These translation devices, because there will be simultaneous translation in French and English. Two of our presentations will be in French and two in English. Just as a way of introduction, the Union and our country partners have been developing models and best practices to help reduce the morbidity and mortality caused by the dual epidemic of TB and HIV, particularly in many of the low-resource countries where human and financial resources are limited. We're working now in Myanmar, Benin, Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda, and shortly in Zimbabwe. And our model for collaborative TB and HIV services includes capacity building and strengthening of the linkages between the national AIDS and tuberculosis control programs, development of a logistical support and also the information systems, and the provision of antiretroviral and care to those who are dually infected. And we use the TB program as the entry point for HIV care. So we have four presentations. I think the program said five, but we have four presentations from Uganda, Zimbabwe, Benin, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. So I'd like to just call to the podium now our first speaker, who is Dr. Rose Okot-Chono from Uganda, and she's the Integrated HIV Care Coordinator for the Union in Kampala. And she's going to talk to us about addressing the barriers to the implementation of combined TB-HIV activities in Uganda. Dr. Okot-Chono, welcome.
Thank you. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be sharing an operational research finding regarding the barriers to the implementation of TB-HIV collaborative activities in Uganda. Just as a background, Uganda is among the 22 high-burden countries with TB, with an HIV prevalence of about 7%, and the estimated burden of HIV in TB patients is 50%. TB is still a leading cause of morbidity among people living with HIV/AIDS in Uganda, and it's estimated that approximately 30% of HIV patients die due to TB. Because of the dual epidemic that we are experiencing in the country, the National TB Program and the National AIDS Control Program embarked on setting up a National Coordination Committee that was spearheading the activities of TB-HIV implementation. And specifically, their first task was to develop policies to implementation of TB and HIV in the country. And this policy was developed and disseminated early in 2006 and disseminated to the various implementers. The Ministry of Health also revised the recording and reporting tools for TB-HIV, specifically the tools in the TB register, as well as the tools that are used for recording TB data. And they inserted columns that captured TB-HIV activities. There's currently ongoing training of health providers on the aspect of TB-HIV collaboration and continuous support supervision to ensure that health workers are implementing TB-HIV activities as per the national guidelines. Despite all of the efforts from the Ministry of Health and various partners, we still, however, are seeing that uptake of HIV testing among TB patients is still low, and this can be a proxy for us to understand that TB-HIV collaborative activities are still low and not well implemented in Uganda. So the National TB and AIDS Control Program, together with the union, embarked on conducting an operational research that was multi-phased to help them to understand why the implementation of TB and HIV collaborative activities was still at a low scale. The guiding question and objective for the operational research was to identify barriers to join TB-HIV activities, and through the barriers that we would have identified, provide recommendations to the policymakers as well as to the implementers on how best to implement TB-HIV activities. I'll now go into the details of the operational research that we started in 2006. The study design, we used both qualitative and quantitative methods, and I'll explain that a little later. And we conducted this operational research in 5 districts. I should mention that initially we had 3 districts. However, because of the restructuring that is currently taking place in the country, 2 of our districts were split, and we ended up with 5 districts instead of 3. We selected primary healthcare settings, both government and non-government institutions, and there were hospitals and health center 4s and 3s. And we selected these sites specifically because they were providing collaborative services, at least the basic collaborative services that included diagnostic services, TB treatment, and ART, as well as provision of continuum of care, especially in the aspect of management of opportunistic infections and contramoxazole. However, I should mention that 3 of the sites that we selected were not providing ART. Our study population included TB patients, HIV patients, and those who are co-infected, as well as health providers and community members. So in phase 1, we conducted a qualitative study, and we assessed the knowledge, attitudes, practices, and beliefs of our study population in regard to TB-HIV collaborative activities. We used qualitative methods, including focus discussions, as well as in-depth interviews. And we assessed barriers to the implementation of collaborative activities at the health system level, at the provider level, the patient, as well as community levels. Then from the barriers that we identified in the qualitative study, we then implemented another cross-sectional quantitative study and used the barriers that we identified as a baseline to help us to develop our questionnaire for the quantitative study. The guiding question for the second phase or cross-sectional study was to determine factors affecting uptake of HIV testing in TB patients, and we used a standardized questionnaire. Our outcome measure for the second phase of our quantitative study was TB patients reporting an uptake of HIV testing or reporting that they had had an HIV test, and we validated that report using the various registers, the TB register, the HIV counseling and testing register, or any patient medical form that had information indicating that they had had an HIV test. We conducted this study in the same setting. In the quantitative study, we just increased the number of sites to have a proper and more generalized aspect of understanding our issues and the barriers. We also were able to interview 399 patients in the quantitative study, and among those, 252 were males. We used both systematic and consecutive sampling technique in recruiting our patients, and this was based on the number of patients that we could identify from each of the various facilities. I'd now like to present the results, and I would like to upfront say that phase one study was completed and the results are conclusive. However, for the phase two, we have just completed the data collection, and the results that I'll be presenting will be preliminary. So from the phase one qualitative study, some of the factors that we identified as barriers were limited planning and coordination at the district level as well as at the health center level, and specifically the issue of lack of leadership on who should take a role in overseeing and coordinating TB-HIV meetings was found to be a barrier. The HIV side or the TB side, nobody seemed to know who should take a lead in coordinating the meetings. Aspects of shortage in testing kits was noted in almost all the facilities that we worked at, as well as lack of cotrimoxazole and ARVs. And the issue of high cost of the CD4, the X-rays and the drugs also was noted as a barrier to implementation. The issue of lack of provider awareness and knowledge regarding TB-HIV was also identified, and specifically for the health workers, the challenges were how do I as a health worker manage to manage a patient who is co-infected with TB and HIV? How do I address the issue of TB treatment together with nevirapine-containing regimens? And how do I initiate HIV counseling and testing if I am at the TB side? And for patients, for the health workers working in the HIV clinic, diagnosis of HIV, of TB was quite a challenge. We also noted that TB and HIV clinics, though in the same compound, within the same vicinity, we're not operating in a similar manner and we're not working on the same day in most of the facilities. And as a result, patients, for example, who had been identified to have TB and were referred for HIV counseling had to wait for another day that the HIV clinic was open to go and get tested. And in that process, many patients get lost in the system, and those who are referred sometimes do not go to the sites that they had been referred to. Also notably was the issue of poor recording and reporting. We do understand that it's possible that because the new tools were introduced in the districts early in 2006, some of the health workers didn't have the registers that captured data on TB-HIV, but also that they were not recording and reporting information regarding TB-HIV. The issues also of staff motivation and shortages of staff was noted. Specifically in the private sector, we found that many of our health workers were leaving the private facilities to go to the government facilities because of better pay in government. Then obviously the issue of HIV-related stigma and the dual epidemic between TB and HIV causing a lot of stigma in the community. Results from our quantitative study, we found that approximately 77% of our TB patients, that's the out of the 399 TB patients that we interviewed in the cross-sectional study, approximately 77% had tested for HIV. And if we compared this with our findings from the qualitative study, only 40% had tested. So there seems to be an increase in HIV testing from the 2006 and 2007. And HIV uptake was highest in patients from the district in Kumi and lowest in Apart district. We also found that among those who had tested for HIV significantly, approximately 50% had tested for HIV before they knew their TB diagnosis. And this is a good thing, I think, for the HIV control program, because it shows that many of our population in the districts are actually accessing HIV testing. And also it addresses the issue of TB suspects. People are being identified even prior to knowing their TB diagnosis, they have had an HIV test. We also found of interest that 13% of our patients had a repeat test before they knew their TB diagnosis and after their TB diagnosis. And we think this is important because if someone tested for HIV and they're found to be HIV negative, there is a possibility that they could become HIV positive at some point in time. And therefore, it's encouraging that people tested not only before they knew their TB diagnosis, but also after their TB diagnosis. We also noted that over 166 patients who tested after TB was diagnosed, approximately 70% of them tested in the first 2 months. However, we noted also that the 30% who tested after 2 months are still a challenge for us as people who are involved in TB and HIV programs. We need to get as many of them back to test for HIV as soon as possible, because we know that for TB, in the first 2 months, if someone does not receive care, then they are more likely to have, they have a 40 to 50% chance of death. This is just a graph to show us HIV testing among TB patients by districts. As I had mentioned earlier, Kumi District had the highest uptake of 95%. But it's interesting to note that in Kumi, of those who tested, the 95% who tested, over 60% had tested before they came into the TB setting, in comparison to the other districts. I'd like to also present results that we found, and these results are really cross-tabulations and bivariate analysis. We'll significantly look at the issues that we think, although may not be predictors, but are helpful for us to understand our setting and our populations, and we feel that these associations can help us in our program interventions. When we looked at demographic factors, patient demographic factors, we found that education and marital status were associated with HIV testing. Patients who were educated, more educated, had a higher uptake of HIV compared to patients who did not have any formal education. And among the married patients had less uptake of HIV testing compared to those who are married, who are not married. And in Uganda, this is of interest to the HIV program because we found that the married seem to be the drivers of the HIV epidemic. And so if we are still seeing few of them getting tested, then that's also an issue of concern. I've put here qualitative and quantitative. We also looked at some of the key factors that were identified as barriers from the qualitative study and compared to what extent they were actually significantly associated with HIV uptake. So we found that in the qualitative study, it was reported that males feared to test and they discouraged their female partners to test. It was also further noted that male patients tended to use their female partners as a proxy to HIV testing, and this is an issue, especially in our setting where we have a high discordance. Each individual actually should have an HIV test and not use the results of their partner. And this is further confirmed. We found that more females tested compared to males in the quantitative study. It was also reported that elderly and young patients were not routinely offered an HIV test, and this was mainly because they thought they were not sexually active, they were less at risk. And when we looked at our findings from the cross-sectional study, it does show that more of the young 18 to 24-year-olds tested compared to the males, but this was not found to be statistically significant. The issue of inadequate patient awareness and knowledge of TB, HIV issues was also reported in the qualitative study. And from our quantitative study, we find that only half of our TB patients were aware of the relationship between TB and HIV. And among those who were aware, we find a higher uptake of HIV testing compared to those who were not aware about the relationship between TB and HIV. Issues of poor infrastructure and privacy, lack of privacy, were found to be barriers. in the qualitative study, and when we assessed and evaluated this in the quantitative study, we did find that actually about, again, 50% of our TB patients expressing discomfort at the level of privacy in the health facility. And privacy, lack of privacy seemed to be associated with less uptake of HIV testing compared to those who did not feel that there was an issue of privacy. We also noted that most of our patients paid for transport to travel to the health facility. And of interest, contrary to what is normally expected, we found that people who paid for transport had a higher uptake of HIV testing compared to individuals who didn't pay for their transport. And the issue here is one could only speculate, probably the issue of proximity and fearing of to go for an HIV test because maybe you'll be identified, or is it that if I pay for services, I am more likely to maximally use the opportunities and utilize the services that are available. We also found that patients have long waiting time in the health facility, and this was mainly associated with providers who are very few and cannot attend to all the patients. When we evaluated this particular factor, we found that indeed 50% of our patients reported that they spend less than 30 minutes receiving care at the health facility. However, spending a short time in the health facility was associated with a low uptake of HIV compared to individuals who spent at least within between 30 to 60 minutes in the health facility. And again here, the issue might be that the interaction time between a provider and a patient, if it's small, if it's short, then it's possible that issues of TB, HIV are not addressed, patients are not offered counseling, and therefore less likely to have an HIV test. In regard to some of the provider factors, we found that only 50% of our TB patients were informed about the relationship between HIV and TB after their TB diagnosis. And uptake of HIV was higher among patients who had been informed by a health provider about this relationship. And this obviously is an issue of concern because we are moving towards patient information, we are moving towards provider-initiated diagnostic counseling and testing, and we find that only half of our TB patients were given the opportunity to have an HIV test, and also half of them were given information regarding TB, HIV. And I'd like to also emphasize that we found that it was statistically significant that over 97% of our TB patients who were offered a test by the health provider actually took up an HIV test, and only 61% of those who were not offered a test took it up. So it emphasizes the importance that health providers need to be more proactive in initiating issues of TB, HIV. Now, what I have just presented were mainly associations. So from our logistics regression, we wanted to identify what factors among those that were statistically significant could predict an HIV test uptake among TB patients. And I'd like to mainly emphasize the bottom two. We found that where a provider did not give information about TB, HIV, and where a patient didn't know about the relationship between TB, HIV, they were then less likely to have an HIV test. In regard to the three districts, I believe that it's other confounding factors, for example, how the health systems are run, issues of human resource, capacity, issues of logistics could have given us these particular results. I'd like to also share some of the lessons that we have identified from Kumi District. As you realize, we mentioned earlier that over 95% of our TB patients in Kumi District had an HIV test. And these are some of the things that we identified that probably could have contributed to that high uptake. We found that health providers were trained routinely to initiate counseling and testing at any service point in the health facility. And it wasn't restricted only to the TB and HIV clinic, but in outpatient department, in the wards, patients could access an HIV test. And I presume that this could have contributed to the high uptake of HIV testing prior to TB diagnosis. And then TB patients are also informed that HIV testing is part of policy and were routinely offered an HIV test and given the option to opt out. We also noted that in Kumi, TB patients are referred directly to the lab and not necessarily having to be referred to the HIV clinic for an HIV test. And this minimizes the waiting time. It also helps in minimizing aspects of continuous referral from one site to the other. And we feel that this is a good thing that could be adopted. We also noted that there was collaboration between the service providers in the health facility. The TB, the HIV clinic, and the lab were working hand in hand. And also in Kumi specifically, we noted that there's involvement of non-professional staff, mainly nursing assistants, in provision and initiation of HIV counseling and testing. It's not really restricted to a clinical officer or a nurse, but any health worker, irrespective of their qualification, was able to initiate HIV testing. And this addresses the aspects of human resource. And also of significance, I'd like to note that in Kumi, there is a strong partner, CDC, that is supporting in provision of logistics, specifically provision of HIV test kits, which in Uganda is really a very big problem and a very big barrier to TB HIV, and CDC is also supporting the provision of Cotrim. And these, in a way, kind of make patients go for testing because they know if I am found to be positive, there is an aspect of being introduced into care. I'd like to conclude with some recommendations based on our findings this far. I'd like to advocate that all TB patients should test early for HIV within the first 2 months of TB treatment. We also advocate that we should design and disseminate key messages that are specific to HIV screening for TB patients and use the various media, either the mass media or use the health education system in the health facilities and also the community-based organizations. And we should focus on issues of TB-HIV relationship and address misconceptions. As found in our study, we found that about half of our patients assumed that if someone had TB, they also obviously had HIV, and that is not really true. Also, the issue of male involvement is critical if we are to increase uptake of HIV testing in our communities. The curriculum for TB and HIV should be reviewed and incorporate modules for collaborative activities, specifically in the HIV manuals. And then aspects of infrastructure should be addressed so that privacy is no longer a problem. And then we should think of ways to use the existing human resource creatively to improve delivery of collaborative activities. And finally, for the health providers, all our health providers should be trained in collaborative services at all levels and not necessarily restrict to the hospitals but go down even to the health center floors and include routine HIV counseling and testing. It should not necessarily be only voluntary counseling and testing, because routine counseling and testing is very brief, it's very short, it can be initiated at any service point in the health facility. We further recommend that all TB patients should always be routinely informed about TB-HIV. And where a patient has had an HIV test prior to TB diagnosis or had a test before, we should encourage them to test if they initially tested HIV negative. And if patient tested HIV negative prior to TB diagnosis, this test should be repeated at least after 3 months. And HIV testing should be offered as a routine to all persons seeking care in health facilities, because we are now moving towards the issue of getting TB patients while they are still suspects or even before they become suspects, so that they get linked to HIV care as soon as possible. And TB and HIV services should be offered on the same day and facilitated with referral. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Okwuchonu, for that very comprehensive presentation. I think the use of the qualitative research to inform the quantitative research was very nice, the comparison. I think what we'll do is to take questions now after each presentation. There are microphones available. And also, for the people who entered late, I want to make sure that you all have your headphones, because two of the presentations will be in French for those of you who know English and vice versa. So please make sure that you get them so you'll be able to understand the presentations. Do I see microphones there? Yeah. Are there any questions for Dr. Okochono? Dr. Harris.
Tony Harris, Malawi. Rose, thank you very much for a very nice presentation. At the beginning of your talk, you mentioned one of the barriers to implementation being high cost of drugs. So I just wanted to seek clarification on this. Do patients have to pay for CPT and ART? And if so, why? Because Uganda is well supported with Global Fund, PEPFAR, so surely these drugs should be free for all patients, including TB patients.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the high cost comes in when we have shortages of ARVs and Cotrimoxazole. So patients then have to buy it off the counter from clinics. So that's where the high cost comes in. And we know that government provides our ARVs for free, but we've had issues with Global Fund, and sometimes our supply of ARVs is quite irregular. And it's in such circumstances that patients have to buy. And then also the other issue for cost is our facilities, specifically those that are at district level and health center level, are mainly given nevirapine-containing regimen. And when you're talking about a co-infected patient, the issue of efavirenz comes in. And because most of our facilities don't regularly have efavirenz, sometimes patients may need to buy. We have JCRSC that provides drugs for cost at a low price, but patients sometimes have to incur costs for that.
Yes, second question.
Kevin Bellis from South Africa. You've spoken about the management activities that underpin this excellent presentation. I just wondered whether you'd looked at trying to make accountability for managers part of the policies that you're trying to implement in Uganda, so people with a leadership issue are actually brought to account.
I think in regards to leadership of TB, HIV, it has been decentralized. So that's the idea. The concept is that it should be decentralized. And for most of our managers at district level, it's a bit of a challenge on how to hold them accountable. But in regards to the implementers at the lower facility levels, we have low-level managers. Those ones can be held accountable. They come up with district plans, and based on those plans, that can be used as a tool of assessment on how well they perform. But it's still something that is very, very weak. Accountability of managers' performance is sometimes a challenge in a setting like ours.
We'll take the last, I think I see two people at the mic, and we'll take those two questions and then move on. Yes.
Thank you for a very informative presentation. I thought that your study was very interesting and rich and well designed. My question is about how you disseminated the results from the study and how widely and to whom, and whether you feel that just disseminating the results and maybe going back to some of those facilities that you that participated in the study has caused them to make any changes and improve in some of those areas that you found that were barriers or weaknesses. I find that a lot of times operational research stops there with the research. And I see here a lot of different international partners that are obviously funding and interested in overcoming those barriers. So if you could just address how well you've disseminated, how widely, and then if you've been able to evaluate any impact of that dissemination.
Okay. As I said, we've just finished phase two. Actually, we finished the data collection for the quantitative study just in October. For the qualitative study, we held a workshop Incidentally, the IHC program is working with the National TB and the National AIDS Control Program. And so they have been quite involved in being updated on our initial findings of the qualitative study. We have also been able to disseminate and give feedback to the districts in form of a report, and also we held some workshops in the districts where we conducted the study. And at the facilities, because we went back for the second phase, we also sat down and mentioned some of the issues. And I believe that part of we could also say that our presence in the health facilities while we're conducting the study helped to raise the awareness about the importance of TB, HIV, and some issues that we were able to address at that particular time that we found as challenges have now been turned into some good success stories in some of the districts that we are working in.
I want to add something here. There's a phase three that has been planned in order to see some of the barriers that have been found and then to actually do some testing to see to design interventions to see if they actually have an impact. So that's another aspect. But I think your point about the dissemination of information from these good results is absolutely key and is built into the activity. I think was there one last question? Yeah.
Thank you very much for the informative presentation. My name is Evelyn from Zimbabwe. You just mentioned that health workers are working in the public sector, and this is a challenge in my country. Would you like to share with us how you've managed to attract health workers in the public sector? Thank you.
I think that's a question for my government, but I think one of the issues has been that the pay for the health workers in government is actually better than in most of our private health facilities. And we're talking about faith-based health institutions. They tend to pay less. And there is a tendency to believe that government always is a good safety net. There are quite a number of benefits. So I think those are some of the motivators or incentives that have attracted health workers to the public sector.
Thank you, Dr. Kuchono. We need to move on to our next presentation. I'd like to call to the podium Dr. Charles Sandy, who's the National Tuberculosis Program Manager for Zimbabwe. And he's going to speak to us on the challenges faced by healthcare workers in providing care and support for joint HIV and TB activities. So welcome.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen.
It's the one
thank you, Paula.
It's the one before.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to discuss a little about the challenges faced by healthcare workers in the Zimbabwean context in providing joint TB-HIV care. This map just shows Zimbabwe. We are somewhere here today, and Zimbabwe is up here. It's a small country with a population of about 12 million, and most of our people live in the rural areas. The country is a bit poor. The GDP is $363 per capita. One of the biggest challenges is hyperinflation, which the country is currently experiencing. And in terms of TB, the services are integrated within the general health services and everything is free. The country has adopted the national health strategy, which is based on a primary health care approach. We belong to one of the group of 22 high-burden countries, and our notification rates in 2005 were 388 per 100,000, and for all forms of TB, and for sputum positive, it was 101. Our case detection rate is consistently low at 42%, and the treatment success rate is also very low at 54%. This is coupled with a high case fatality rate. TB care is provided by various kinds of health workers, which include village health workers, nurses, environmental health workers, pharmacy technicians, and doctors. Zimbabwe is in the HIV, one of the, is facing a big HIV challenge, and according to the DHS survey, which was done in 2005-2006, we've got a rate of about 21% HIV in women and 15% in men in the 15 to 49 age group. The rate is actually declining, and last week our minister highlighted that it was now around 15%. But this comes from a peak of about 30% in 2000. In terms of HIV services, we have got a well-running PMTCT program which started way back in 1999, and most of our services are offered in public health facilities and various NGO organizations where rapid HIV testing is being done. The tests are done by nurses and laboratory scientists and technicians. However, in terms of TB, less than a third of our TB patients are actually undergoing HIV testing and counseling. And we have discovered that 60 to 80% of the tested patients are also HIV infected. One of our biggest challenges is that newly diagnosed people with HIV are not being routinely screened for TB. This is the case in most government institutions, but when it comes to NGOs, I think they've got the tools in hand to screen for TB. In terms of antiretroviral therapy, we still have some difficulties in achieving the full coverage that we would like. ARVs have been available since 2003, but we are now reaching about almost 100,000 people on ARVs, and those people who are also on TB treatment are eligible for ARVs, but we don't have figures as to how many people are actually benefiting. So I would say some of the top three challenges that we are facing in terms of HIV care are the inconsistent availability of test kits, and then we've got a high attrition rate of healthcare workers. So continuously we need to be training people on all aspects of HIV care. Then the other limiting rate is the unavailability of adequate ARVs. Just to highlight the HIV problem further, we had about 135,000 new HIV infections in 2005, which is quite a lot, and we estimated that almost 1.4 million people are living with HIV and AIDS. 70% of our inpatient admissions are also due to HIV problem, and in 2005, we estimated that about 140,000 people died from AIDS. This has led to a decline in the median life expectancy at birth, which is now just about 36 years. To fight the twin disease, we need adequate human resources, and this happens to be one of our biggest challenges, unlike Uganda, where they have more people. We actually have people trying to leave the service. Data from the World Health Report of 2006 just illustrates the gross deficits in terms of availability of human resources. If you look at physicians, we only had about 2,086, and I think this figure is the global figure for all the physicians who are registered, but not who are actually working in Zimbabwe. So the coverage is actually even lower than this one. The same applies to nurses, where we have about 0.7 72 per 1,000 of the population. And I think looking at it carefully, we are almost in the same league as countries like Mozambique and Malawi, who are facing critical shortages of health workers. There are many reasons why we are losing our health workers, but the underlying causes seem to be the economic crisis which the country is currently facing, and because of hyperinflation, lack of resources for health workers to be able to do their work, unattractive remuneration packages, and as well as lack of retention packages. Despite all these challenges, the government has introduced, has come up with a number of responses to address the problem. And one of them was to introduce incentives for rural-based health workers in the form of special allowances, subsidized accommodation, water and electricity. The government has also increased production from the traditional schools of medicine and nursing and laboratories, and this has assisted to some extent, and we are now requiring that all people who are trained in Zimbabwe also offer the government some compulsory form of national service after training. And what we are trying to do to enforce this is to retain the certificates of those people who have been trained, and then after their compulsory service, they are given their certificates and can go elsewhere. We have also reintroduced some middle grades, which we had done away with some years back, and we have what are called primary care nurses, and we are also reintroducing clinical officers and laboratory technicians instead of scientists, and we have also started a program of training microscopists. With assistance from partners, we are going to be introducing some better packages for people who are working in districts, but this is mainly going to target the senior management, that is the district medical officer, the district nursing officer, and the pharmacy technician, as well as the medical laboratory scientist. We are not so sure whether this will be a right move, whether it will also not create disharmony with the other health workers who will not be getting this package. The ministry has also now started developing a human resource strategic plan, and I think the aim is to address the problems more comprehensively. So in analyzing the challenges which are being faced, I looked at the current interim policy of the WHO on collaborative TB-HIV activities. I don't have to go through it because I'm sure most of us, we already know it. So in terms of TB-HIV coordinating bodies, we are still at an early stage in having these in place, including at national level. We have the people, but it has been difficult to have meetings going. There seems to be some lack of motivation to actually provide joint services amongst health workers. And one of our biggest challenges is that we haven't developed clear guidelines and tools which would guide the health workers. In terms of HIV surveillance among TB patients, this is not being routinely done, though we actually encourage it to be done. And when it's done, it's not being captured because the tools for capturing this have not been available. TB-HIV joint planning is done to some limited extent because the people responsible for TB are not part of management structures, both at district level and at provincial level. In terms of TB-HIV monitoring, we have incomplete data, and we are also not utilizing this data for planning. I think there's a culture which we need to address of utilizing the available data for our work. When it comes to intensified case finding, we, as I said, the lack of standardized screening tools is a challenge, and there's a problem in having good access and availability of diagnostic services. Isoniazid preventive therapy is a very topical issue because our health providers are concerned about whether we will not be able to generate a lot of resistance given the fact that our diagnostic capability is not as it should be. Our X-ray machines are very old and they are prone to breakdowns, and sputum microscopy, the services are not available every time. Sometimes there are some operational challenges on the ground. In terms of TB infection control, we still have a problem in that our TB suspects and patients just mingle with other patients in the OPD, in the OI, and in the X-ray department, and which means that both patients and staff are at risk. So we have started work on reviewing the current policy and updating it. Sorry, this is a bit of a loaded slide, looking at HIV testing and counseling. We have an opportunity in that most of our patients are keen to know about their HIV status because they have seen the benefits of ARVs to other people, and so there's actually a demand. However, our shortcoming is that we are not able to have the tests because of shortages of kits sometimes. In terms of preventive methods, we routinely give health education and condoms, but IEC materials are inadequate. Cotrimoxazole has not been a big problem, and there's good coverage for those who have been identified to be HIV infected. Almost all the patients are actually on cotrimoxazole. However, there is a problem in terms of adherence because we don't have the tools to actually ensure that we are monitoring and following up all the defaulters. When it comes to HIV AIDS care and support, we have various community networks available, but as health workers, we haven't had the capacity to utilize these ones fully, and the collaboration is still poor. Our TB patients, only a small proportion are actually getting ART because there's no special prioritization given to TB patients. I think this is mainly because we've got a very critical shortfall in terms of the amount of ARV drugs that we need. Then we have a problem in that some of our doctors do not believe in commencing patients on ART using WHO criteria. They would rather wait for a patient to have a CD4 count, and that service is still limited in most provinces. Some even do not even commence patients on cotrimoxazole because they will still want to see a CD4 count. So this also indicates the need for strong and regular training. So the biggest hindrance to all these activities is the irregular supply of ARVs, which is a source of major frustration for both the healthcare workers and the patients. So in summary, I would say the broad challenges which we are facing as health workers is the human resource capacity in terms of lack of training on the job and on TB HIV, the inadequate numbers of personnel, and the non-attractive remuneration packages which result in high attrition. Then we have got limitations in diagnostic capacity in terms of the supply of HIV test kits. Sometimes the test kits are available at central level, but due to poor supply management, they will not be available at the operational level. Then we have got problems with smear microscopy, where we are now trying to address this by training microscopists. And one of our challenges is that when it comes to HIV tests, the stance by laboratory professionals in terms of who does rapid tests, I think it's a big challenge in Zimbabwe. Our laboratory professionals have been very strong on this issue that nobody but them should be doing laboratory tests. And when nurses are trained to do rapid HIV tests, the Professional Council of Laboratory Scientists insists that they should be certified and they should be paying annual fees to their body. So this has created a problem. And as I said, the limited availability of ARVs is contributing to staff burnout, because staff just see the patients whom they feel they are not able to do something about. Another issue is infrastructural inadequacies. And here we are talking about availability of adequate numbers of consultation and consulting rooms. This is an issue, but also from our visits, we feel that we need to support our providers more often, because sometimes it's just a matter of reorganizing what is available and starting the service. The last challenge which I would like to highlight is that we would like to measure what we are doing to measure the impact, but at the same time, it seems like we are overloading our health workers with too many data gathering tools. We have got all the programs want to know about malaria, about TB, about HIV, but at the end of the day, this rests on one health worker. So now we are looking at coming up with an integrated tool which should be able to gather the key information which we require at a programmatic level. Despite all those problems, I think we can still have some possible solutions, and I try to categorize the solutions by level. At the health facility level, I think we need to work better with the communities so that we have a better continuity of care. Then at the district level, we'd like our districts to set up TB-HIV advisory bodies and to conduct regular support and supervision to the health facilities, as well as do monitoring evaluation. This was supposed to be at provincial level. And at provincial level, I think there's need to identify a focal point for TB-HIV and to set up a provincial TB-HIV advisory committee, and also to support the provinces to conduct regular supportive supervision to the districts, as well as to conduct M&E. At the national level, we have a big problem in that the national TB program is only composed of two people. So there's need actually to expand the national TB program staff at national level. Otherwise, we'll not be able to achieve much. Then we are going to have to accelerate the development of guidelines and disseminate those guidelines and train our health workers on TB, HIV. We also need to participate in all the efforts at national level which are meant to address health systems improvement. Then we need to be more innovative in mobilizing resources so as to facilitate provision of drugs, diagnostics, the coordination activities and the meetings at all levels. I think this is one of our biggest challenges in that the national level is not being able to have adequate resources. We managed to get round 5 of the Global Fund, but up to now we still haven't received the money for us to start some of the activities which should actually improve a lot on TB and HIV. I think the main reason why we haven't been able to get the money is simply an issue of economics, whereby the exchange rate which the Global Fund was being given by government was not acceptable to Global Fund, and a mechanism was designed to address that issue, but it still has to be implemented by the Global Fund. So in conclusion, I would like to say that TB-HIV collaboration is an important aspect of improving the quality of health services given the magnitude of the HIV problem in Zimbabwe. And unfortunately, we haven't realized the full spectrum of activities that we can do. What is of critical importance is to improve the conditions of service for health workers so that we have the workers available to provide a service and to provide a continuous service. And we need to quickly develop the TB-HIV guidelines and tools so that we expand the coverage and also improve on the quality of services that we are providing. I think I'll end here. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Sandy. Are there any questions for Dr. Sandy? And if so, please come to the microphone. While we're waiting, I do have one. I don't know if there's really an answer for this, but I'll ask it anyway. I mean, many of the possible solutions that you proposed need people. Need people to do the supervision, the monitoring evaluation, to develop the guidelines, etc. And yet you point out the big struggle that you have in the country right now to retain people. People are leaving to get other jobs, etc. So, I mean, how will you do this? These are the possible solutions, but how can you really do this when the lack of the human resources is really the critical issue for the country?
Yeah, I think it's a very big challenge, and one of the issues, I said, was that government with partners is going to be supporting the district health executive members so that at least if you have those key people at the district level, they might ensure that there's continuity of services. And under the Global Fund, round 5, once it starts rolling in, we will be able to recruit a few extra people for the national level, that is a TB training officer, a data manager, and two assistant program managers. So there are those opportunities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we still need, I think, additional support.
Are there any? Yes, at the mic there.
Leon Mtei from Tanzania. I salute you, Dr. Sandy, and all the health workers for remaining in Zimbabwe. You seem to really love your country.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm Kennedy Mopeli from Botswana. I just wanted to find out from you, Doctor. You've outlined quite a number of challenges that the healthcare delivery system is facing in Zimbabwe. If I quoted you very well, you said the pre-deliverance rate stood at 30% in 2000, and just last month the Minister of Health announced that it has dropped to 15%. what best practices can we copy from Zimbabwe that we can also implement in other countries? Well, this mammoth achievement really is, we are admiring it and we want to applaud you for that. So can you just outline to me briefly what specific activities you undertook in the community to amend this to the challenges that you have put up, you've just, you know, indicated here. How did you manage to achieve that? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the encouraging comments. The reason why we are experiencing this sharp decline in the HIV prevalence, I think there could be a number of factors in terms of number one, the methodologies which were used to measure the HIV prevalence rates. I think there could be some slight changes which were done over the past 2 or 3 years compared to what was being done in 2000. Then number two is we have consistently been talking about HIV prevention methods on the radio, on the TV, and everywhere. So there's a high level of awareness of HIV amongst the population and of how to prevent it. And we also make sure that condoms are freely available, and we encourage people to use condoms. Then there's also the issue of some people said perhaps the reason why it's coming down could be also an issue of whether we are not having so many people leaving the country or so many people also dying from the disease. So there are a number of factors, but I'm sure it's a lot to do with increasing the awareness about HIV and the prevention methods.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sandy. I now give the microphone to my colleague from Benin to make the next two introductions.
Bien, merci. Je voudrais d'abord demander à nos amis anglophones de prendre leur casque parce que les prochains exposés se feront par des francophones. Alors, sans plus tarder, je vais passer la parole à Kapochichi et Diane du Bénin pour nous parler de l'impact des activités collaboratives dans la prise en charge de la co-infection et du VIH dans les services de santé et surtout dans le passage à l'échelle en ce qui concerne l'administration des ARV au Bénin. Donc, Dr. Kapochi, vous avez la parole.
Merci, professeur. Chers collègues, chers auditeurs, j'ai le devoir aujourd'hui de vous présenter l'expérience du Bénin dans l'intégration des soins de la co-infection au sein du système de santé générale. Comme je le disais tout à l'heure, il s'agit du Bénin.
Benin is a small country in West Africa with a population of 7.6 million and HIV prevalence of 2%. We have about 3,500 patients who are TB positive, and we have a co-infection of about 550 cases per year. In 2006, the HIV prevalence was 15%. Out of these, I'm going to describe our health system. We have the Ministry of Health. Within the Health Ministry, we have the Directorate of the Minister of Health, who supervises the National Directorate of the Health of Health Protection and other directorates I did not mention here. We have all the national programs, the TB program, HIV program, malaria program, who report to the National Directorate for Health Protection. You have the National Directorate here that supervises, as I was saying, the National TB program. As well as PNLS at the central level. The central level of the TNP is based at the National Hospital in Cotonou, where the PNLS is based within the ministry. As far as co-infection activities are concerned and collaborative efforts, we have developed collaboration between these two programs recently. So each national program has a representative at the district level. We have the Health District Directorate that supervises intermediary levels at the district level. The NTP is represented within the Service of Protection and Promotion of Health, whereas the PNLS is represented by the CIPEC, which is an information and advisory services. We also have what we call CDT, that are diagnosis and treatment centers for tuberculosis, as well as PNLS location sites that are health centers that care for people living with HIV/AIDS. What was the situation of co-infections before 2005? There was hardly any collaboration between the two programs. We worked separately, so almost no collaboration. There wasn't much screening activities across TB and HIV. Staff were not trained in co-infection. We had deaths in patients that were suspects of co-infection, since the test was not systematically offered so very often. We were working out to benefit from the support of
systématique et la prise en charge et le suivi se font.
Take place on a daily basis. And periodically, we go in. Problems on the ground. Since this activity is new, we need to follow these activities closely. Since we are dealing with co-infection, we have put into place a supply system for the centers, because the PNLS had its own supply system. Centers were already giving, offering care. The PNLS, the National TB Program, the NTP. As part of this project, we found that some CDTs recruit a large number of TB patients. So we asked the PNLS to accredit them as care centers. Of people living with HIV/AIDS. You have some of the outcomes of the first two quarters of 2007. These figures come from these pilot sites. For the first trimester quarter, we had 653 cases of multiple TB, and at least 88% accepted to be tested. Second quarter, 94% accepted to be tested. For HIV, we had 80% were given CTM, and the ARV is 36% for the first quarter and 38% for the second quarter. What are the, if I look at these figures, what I would like to comment is that we offer a minimum package to the people living with HIV/AIDS. It includes CD4 free of charge. The patients to whom we give ARV treatment given ARVs if there is a major deterioration of their clinical condition. We also look at the CD4 count, naturally, when making this decision. What are the highlights? What did come out strongly of this since we have started these activities? We are fortunate because the project is integrated within a program that was already functional and that was reasonably functional. We also had a follow-up system that existed and that was well coordinated. On a quarterly basis, we visit all the health centers, and this is ongoing. If any problem was brought to our attention in one of these health centers, we sent an intermediary to try and solve this problem, and if we could not solve this problem, we decided to go directly on the ground to solve these problems. We periodically organize steering committee meetings. We organize training sessions as well as refresher courses. We have acquired means to help us in our activities. Recently we have drafted a guide for the care of TB HIV patients. We have harmonized management support measures to better manage the data. What helps us greatly also in better management is that the union revised TB registers, and currently in our registers we have columns that enable us to enter HIV data. So for all TB patients in the TB register, we can also have information on their HIV status. We implement the guidelines of the PNLS when we prescribe ARVs. Within each city, we have a team that is responsible for activities when we have visits, when we arrive. Very often the team is there to meet and greet us, and should these people not be there, the documents are available to us, are accessible. We've had a few cases where we could not find the documentation because the person in charge was not around, but it is rather rare. So this work methodology is working very well. Counseling is offered to all TB patients with supervision on a regular basis, and once a year we have a feedback meeting to see what are the results of the activities, the outcome, because the country is divided into six districts, and when we supervise a district, at the end of this supervision, we have a meeting with all the players on the ground, starting with the director of the health center, nursing staff, all those who could contribute to the improvement of what we are doing within the district. We call them for this meeting and present the results, the data we have gathered, and if the data is good, we encourage them. If it's not the case, we try and find solutions to improve future results. Currently, we have undertaken a study on infected patients, and we hope to give you the results of this study next year. If we have strengths, naturally it means that we also have weaknesses. What are the weaknesses that came out? There is a lack of staff in some of the far-flung centers, remote centers, and very often the staff members are sent elsewhere, and a few years down the line they do come back. They do come back to the major cities. So it is very difficult in remote areas to keep staff. Staff retention is not easy. So we train the staff, and you know, you go back in the health center a few months later, or a couple of years later, and they've left. We also have stockouts sometimes of the TDRs, and other weakness is that the tests are not systematically offered to partners of co-infected patients. When we discuss this issue with patients to and we know that they are not always prepared, ready to break out the news to their partner, to their family. Today, tuberculosis is better accepted because there is hope that a few months down the line the patient will be cured, whereas with HIV it is not yet the case. The patient has to comply with the treatment, accept his HIV status. This is a progress, and we hope that very soon these patients will be able to better disclose their status to their family and to their partners. As far as the care locations are concerned, we did not find a large number of TB patients, but of late, over 30% over the last two quarters of patients, co-infected patients, who also reported to be HIV positive. So we have difficulties to change working habits of our medical staff. What are the impacts on our activities within these health centers? We were able to add new activities and the care of co-infected patients in the beginning. Some of the personnel, some of the staff were not motivated enough, but we managed to improve the situation, which is encouraging. They now accept to carry out the work that we ask them to execute. We also had an increase in the number of patients thanks to sensitization awareness campaigns in the media. Every fortnight patients who are hospitalized receive information, education and communication. If the number of patients increases, it means that the work burden has also increased. In some health centers, we are using a CD4 count, and lab staff complain about the fact that this new method we have introduced is rather slow, but they do undertake this work. There is a great improvement in the cooperation between the National TB Program and the National HIV-AIDS Program. What are the challenges? We would like to make sure that all health workers are involved in co-infection work. We would like to be able to offer HIV testing to at least 95% of TB patients. We would like also to offer care to 100% of the patient and to sustain activities. In conclusion, what did we gain since 2005 when we started this project? We were able to strengthen the cooperation between the National TB and National AIDS Program. We increased screening activities, HIV screening activities in TB patients. We acquired new competencies in our various structures. Thank you very much for your kind attention.
Merci, merci Diane. Et je pense que l'exposé est assez clair. Néanmoins, nous allons prendre quelques questions. Et j'avoue que j'ai la lumière dans les yeux,
je ne vois pas la salle, donc you
cannot see the room, so I do use the microphone if you have any question to ask. Have any comments to make? You can go ahead. Thank you, Diane, for this presentation. What I would like to share with you is as follows. So you mentioned, you spoke about your approach to give access to ARVs to TB patients.
La balance au CD4.
You also spoke about a CD4 count and that approach can you do it separately or what is the final choice? You also mentioned about the improvement of integrated supervision with the National AIDS Program staff. Do you not think that we can also train people in the National AIDS Program so that only one person could carry out supervision and could manage and supervise both the TB and HIV aspects? Last point, you spoke about the assessment meeting.
Vous faites un après. Je pense que
organize,
le début, comme c'est de 2006 que vous avez commencé, en 2005 il n'y avait pas de coopération.
No cooperation in 2005. In my view, over the next, the first 2 years, I think that these meetings should be should take place every 6 months. So you do not wait for 12 months before you can look at the weaknesses of the people on the ground. Thank you, doctor. I'm going to start with the last question. Supervision is done on a quarterly basis. The feedback meeting is organized on an annual basis because it was planned as such by the national program. However, since these activities are new, what we do is that we organize meetings with the health workers, as well as people who are in charge of pilot centers, with whom we have discussions, feedback on a regular basis, very often. So we do not wait a whole year to try and assess what is happening on the ground. We actually have follow-up much more often than once a year only. You have another question as far as the CD4 count. We do not prescribe only by looking at the clinical condition. We use the CD4 count method before introducing ARVs to our patients. Since I did not show you the figures for this, we did not give ARVs to all patients with a CD4 count of less than 200. This is why, as I was saying, we also look at the clinical condition. Some patients have a CD4 count above 200 to whom we have to administer ARVs also.
Voilà, voilà.
Currently, although the National AIDS Program is going to organize training, they also speak about tuberculosis, about TB, and in our training program, we also can no longer afford not to speak about HIV. Our training activities are done at the same time. Currently, as far as supervision is concerned for the National TB Program, recently we started integrated supervision and I'm one of the supervisors. I'm part of the group, so we do the supervision together. And only as part of this project, which is going to end soon. The National AIDS Program has its own support mechanism that are not the same as ours, but as I said earlier, we decided to harmonize some of these support measures and mechanisms. We may be able in future to evolve further and to use the same support mechanisms, but we did not reach this stage yet. There are other questions, it seems. We will accept another 2 questions. Be as concise as you can.
Okay.
I will ask Diane to be concise. I wish to thank and congratulate our colleague for her presentation. I would like to know the following. As you highlighted it, when a patient is co-infected over a certain period, if this person lives with AIDS, it is for life. In the TB structures, when you take care for this person for his or her co-infection, do you at a later stage keep these patients in your TB structures, or do you refer this patient to HIV structure? And what about counseling? Yes, it is true that TB TB treatment covers 6 to 8 months. Once these patients have been refer them to the National AIDS Program's centers. But there is the issue of stigma which comes into force, and when patients are used to caregiver, they do not want to go elsewhere. We have some patients who stayed with us in our structures, but a large number of them accepted to continue their treatment in various centers of the National AIDS program. Some of our pilot sites were accredited by the National HIV program. So in the centers, you have the same personal caregivers who take care of TB patients or HIV patients. So in very few centers that we will have to refer the patient to a different center, health center. Another 1 or 2 questions? Yes, good day to you. I'm Dr. Khan of the National TB Program of Senegal. I wish to thank the Benin team. I've got a couple of questions to ask about health information management, since you have integrated the care between the two programs. I do not hear you very well. I would like to speak about health information management issues. Earlier, you said that with the union, you revised the registers at the intermediary level for TB, as far as the tools, quarterly reports, assessment, and so on. Did you revise? How do you manage information between TB and HIV national programs? How do you do that concretely? Secondly, our friend spoke about you spoke about meetings on an annual basis. We would suggest that these meetings take place every 6 months.
I would like to think about that.
And as far as the sustainability of this collaboration, what is going to happen after this project? Did both teams speak about or think about the sustainability of this integrated care? Last question, at which stage the Benin TB National Program offers HIV testing. Thank you, Doctor. We'll start with the last point. As soon as we find that a patient is a TB patient, we suggest that HIV test is carried out, and if the patient accepts it, this testing will happen on the very first day. On the same day, and within 48 hours, we can give the patient the result of the test. As far as sustainability of these activities is concerned,
le projet IAC nous sert de tremplin pour nous lancer, mais nous allons nous battre pour que les activités continuent, parce qu'il y aura toujours des co-infectés.
Ongoing, since we will always have co-infected patients. As far as the intervals at which these meetings are organized, the steering committee meets on a regular basis very often. We do not even wait for 3 months. So 2005, we met on a monthly basis, after which we decided to meet on a quarterly basis. But whenever there is a major problem or issue, we call all the committee members. We organize meetings to discuss these issues. So we do not necessarily wait 3 months for these meetings. On the issue of information management, we harmonized our support mechanisms recently, as I was saying earlier, and we are we have harmonized the register of patients and ARVs, as well as the card for request of tests. So the National AIDS program uses several support mechanisms. They have a great deal of them. They use a large number of them, which is not the case for our program, the TB national program. And we cannot impose to the National HIV Program to use our support mechanisms. We can try and see what could be useful to them and suggest that they use these supports. I hope I've answered your questions. Well, time is limited, so we have to move on. We are going to give the floor to the next speaker because we have to leave this room at 11:15. I'm going to give the floor to the next speaker.
Thank you. We're going to have now Dr. Jean-Pierre, who is going to tell us about the challenges of providing joint TB HIV care in rural health centers in the lower Congo and North Kivu in DRC.
Dr. Jean-Pierre, vous avez la parole.
Okay. Merci beaucoup, professeur.
Thank you very much, professor, for the opportunity that's been given to us to share with you the experiences in DRC in matter
l'intégration des soins TB-HIV, plus particulièrement les aspects
and more particularly in matters of logistics. What I'm going to present you today follows other presentations by DRC with posters which you will find on CD4 count, for example, and on the follow-up of patients and health.
S'il a besoin de beaucoup plus d'ample information, il peut nous contacter. On va lui présenter effectivement des supports qui ont été mis en place dans le cadre de ce projet. Donc, ce projet a été piloté au niveau de la République démocratique du Congo par le programme national de lutte contre la tuberculose.
By the National Tuberculosis Program in Congo, and we were technically supported by the Union. It is a project, so of course it necessitates funding, and the funding came from the European Union and from USAID. Yes, I do. This is a summary of my presentation that will give you an idea of the background, of the context in which this project took place, why we decided to integrate TB-HIV care, and I give you an idea of the supply chain in DRC in terms of TB drugs and ARVs and HIV test kits, what kind of tools we have used, what kind of instruments we have used to ensure good management of this new antiretrovirals in the country, and what kind of results we got from this, what the challenges were, what the lessons were learned, and I'll give you a few conclusions and recommendations at the end. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the DRC, you know that it's in Central Africa, a very vast country. You can see the map on the screen. You know that the country several years of war. We are now in a post-conflict situation. And you can see the impact of war and conflict in the country, the destruction of infrastructure in particular in the health system, for example. As far as the health and facilities are concerned, we have a pyramidal structure with three levels. We have peripheral level, operational level. We have what we call health zones, or what you can call health districts. We have 515 zone or health zone bureaus, as we call them, in our country. And we have more or less 10,000 health areas, as we call them, in the country. As far as TB care management is concerned, we have 1,069 health centers where you can have diagnosis and treatment. At provincial level, we have 23 provincial coordination units of leprosy and tuberculosis, to which you also have 12 provincial coordination units with HIV/AIDS. So we have at least one coordination unit in every province. We have 11 provinces in the country. And finally, the third level is the central level, at the level of a state, where we develop strategies and policies, and we have the central unit of the National Tuberculosis Program and the National HIV/AIDS Program. Our experience, of, our professor mentioned it earlier, this project took place in two provinces of Congo, the one in North Kivu and the other one back Congo, which is lower Congo. We had TB screening in both provinces. You see it goes from 4,000 to 5,000 cases of TB detected every year in the province. That takes place in more than 150 centers if you put the two provinces together. Our treatment rate is 80% for tuberculosis and 89% in the lower Congo, so 85% more or less on average, and HIV prevalence of 5.4% in North Kivu and 6.1% in Congo. So we didn't choose these provinces at random. There was a reason for it. There was a certain level of performance in tuberculosis treatment which was necessary before we could integrate HIV care management within those structures. So integrated HIV care for tuberculosis patients living with HIV, you can see it's research and intervention. The idea is to integrate to use a national tuberculosis program as an entry point for TB patients for diagnosis and treatment of HIV. You see 23 pilot sites, 13 in North Kivu, and in Bakongo. Why or what is the rationale of the integration of this logistic dimension? Firstly, NTP has more than 25 years experience in the care and management of chronic TB patients. This program has been part of the national and primary health system in Congo for 25 years. So these structures or these facilities are public, they can be private or NGOs, they can be faith-based, but all these health facilities are ensuring the care and management. Let's not forget our country is now rebuilding. We have a national restoration program, and the national tuberculosis program has a very specific supply system which covers the whole of the country. If you go to hospitals, if you go to health centers, you will find TB drugs. You are absolutely certain you will find this because we have a very good and permanent supply chain, which is not the case with all other medicine. But of course, since this country is extremely vast, you might have an interruption in the supply, but the interruption would never go longer, would never be longer than a week, let's say, at most. Why integration again? We have a national tuberculosis program, as I told you, in which the supply and distribution circuits are very good, unlike the rest of the country. And we thought that the national HIV/AIDS program could be part of the supply chain and distribution system put into place by the NTP, since this national HIV/AIDS program is not as experienced as the NTP. This is a very recent program. It's just starting to be integrated in the overall health structure of the country. And a few years ago, that program was focusing more on awareness, raising in communities in order to increase prevention and avoid transmission of the population. This is a logistical circuit, so the supply chain of the NTP in the country and the way we integrated HIV AIDS in this. At central level, we have what we call a management committee, which you see on the left here as PATIMED, that comprises all the partners, all the stakeholders playing a role in TB management in the country, whether they are NGOs, international partners or others. And that management committee has for a mandate the validation, estimation and validation of needs at grassroots level. So we analyze this, we validate that, we order TB drugs for the whole of the country from one company. These drugs are received at level, central unit level, and taking into account the vastness of the country, we have two entry points in the country, one in Kinshasa and one in Goma for the east of the country. We have storage facilities in both entry points, and then you go to the provincial coordination. They all have their respective storage facilities, which then are used to distribute drugs towards the health areas and the diagnosis and treatment center. Once all this has been done, information flows back towards the central level with a very performance health information system with which we collect data, we understand how they are being used, and we can refine our orders. As far as ARVs and test kits orders are concerned, instead of this management committee, we have, you can see here on the health, the technical team of the union that has helped us in estimating the needs for order and how to order these drugs. This was done on the basis of HIV prevalence based on the TB data that we received. And these ARVs are followed exactly the same circuit, the same supply chain as the TB drugs. Next to that, we also have some other partners that support our national tuberculosis program and our national HIV AIDS program, and these partners also ordered ARVs and HIV test kits and have distributed these ARVs and tests in the central bureaus in areas of health and in the diagnosis and treatment centers. Without the central units necessarily being aware of the quantities ordered and being distributed at grassroots level. What kind of instrument, what kind of tool did we use for this management of ARVs? Here you have the form on the screen, our quarterly order form, which was based on the TB form. It comprises three parts. The first part contains information or data on the patients we have to treat. That's in the first box. In the second bigger box, we estimate the needs based on cases which have been treated, and we use that to know what kind of stock we need, what kind of reserves we need. And based on all these data, we can make a very precise order. On the back of this form, you have all the inputs or entrants from the laboratories, and that's followed exactly the same method used for the estimation of ARV needs. Why did we do all this? It was to enable TB patients to have access to these tests, and these are the results here during the first year that started in July 2006, ending in July 2007 in these two provinces. We did enroll 3,501 TB patients or registered. 3,014 of them, more or less 86%, have been tested for HIV, thanks to all the tests we ordered. 14% were co-infected, TB and HIV positive, and 86% HIV negative. Among the co-infected patients, 58% had a CD4 count, and 88% of these patients started cotrimoxazole, and 42% started ARV treatment, and we kept following the evolution of the treatment, TB treatment of these patients as well, of course. At operational level, what are the results? I would say that all of these drugs are managed in our diagnosis and treatment center by the same staff, the same people looking after TB patient, looks after co-infected patients. You can see here all these drugs on the same table, TB medicine and ARVs, and when the health providers make orders, they make orders for both at the same time. And this is done simultaneously using the same logistical system. We did experience some difficulties in the management of these two drugs, whether these TB drugs or ARVs. As far as TB drugs are concerned, on the left here, you know that we have fewer drugs to actually manage, whereas on the other side there are more and more ARVs. The regimen has been standardized, has been stable for almost 20 years on the TB side, whereas on the the consensus is quite recent on standardizations, and it needs to be constantly adjusted because some people have a certain intolerance to ARVs, so then you have to replace them, substitute another product, and then with some crossover, some intolerance for people who have problems with the TB medicine ARVs, which they are taking at the same time. Shape Life for entrance for input for TB is generally longer than 3 years, which is quite long. But it's not the case for on the ARV side, which is often lower than 2 years. Now, what kind of constraints or obstacles did we have on our way? I would say that the first constraint was the low enrollment of patients. This was based on an TB-HIV prevalence of co-infection, which was much lower than what we expected. Only 15% actually here. So we actually have double people, but twice fewer people than we expected, so there's a risk of expiry of many of these medicines. We had twice too much. Because, as I said, the shelf life was only 2 years. But since we had other people in need of ART, we have been able to reassign the surplus towards the national HIV-AIDS program, and this medicine has been used for other people living with HIV and AIDS. Another constraint, or another difficulty, let's say, it's to keep a reserve stock at a central level for products with a shelf life of only 2 years. It's very difficult to do that. The consequence is that before you even receive the drug, is a problem. There's sort of 3-5 months from the time they actually left the factory. So sometimes they're only going to be usable for 12 months. If you need a reserve medicine for another few months, sometimes you might have expiry, even at central level, before it even reaches the district. So that's one of the big difficulties. And the other issue was the multiplicity of supply sources, because there were various projects. The union did help us, but all the other partners in the national HIV/AIDS programs has been able to order these drugs sometime on the basis of their affinities or relationship with certain firms. So sometimes we have different shape, different dosages, different experiences. So it was difficult to manage his medicine for our staff. It was difficult, generally the give these pills to people in an almost automatic way, if all of a sudden you have something with different appearance, a different dosage, during the administration of this medicine, you may find yourself being overdosed or underdosed. So that's also a big problem. And the last issue was the high turnover of staff, which made the situation quite unstable. The people who were trained and worked in the health centers, the government doesn't have sufficient resources to keep these people, so we have a high rate of attrition of staff, and they do not stay in the same place for long enough to be able to prescribe ARVs in a very stable form with patients for the duration of a treatment. And the standards DRC is that the ARVs are prescribed by one doctor, and unfortunately these doctors are not there for long enough, and then you have to hire just when you need to put somebody else in place. What are the lessons learned of this project, which may be helping us in the future? We do think that the integration of the supply chain of ARVs within the TB medicine supply chain is absolutely feasible. We have seen it, but it can only be done with some prerequisite, meaning if we train these health providers in the use of this supply chain, so these logistical circuits, and if we manage to have a unique source, the same we do for TB medicine. We think ARV should come from a single source, and that would be a great help at the level of health structures at the grassroots level. And we should have really a mechanism system in place between ARV manufacturers and our country and the partners in our country, because the time we put the order in, the time they are manufactured, then they come to us, it takes almost 6 months. So already we have lost 6 months on the shelf life of these products. And the last point, we can never insist enough on it, the harmonization, the synergy of the activities between both programs, the NTP and the National HIV AIDS program. But we don't want this harmonization to be just wishful thinking. So we have started to take measures towards a more efficient, more effective harmonization of the NTP and the National HIV AIDS program in DRC. Until this supply circuits become more performing and cover the whole of the country, we think that with a national HIV AIDS program can be graft itself on the supply circuit of a national tuberculosis program, so that ARVs and HIV test kits reach the HIV positive patients who are present in the health infrastructure system, and as I say, the NTP covers the whole of the territory. So that's one thing. The second aspect is the important to standardize guidelines for the management of HIV positive patients by health providers in our system. And the third point, maybe relates more to the partners in our country. Our partners should endeavor to harmonize their activities or align themselves with the needs of the country, so that we don't have sometimes an oversupply of some provinces to the detriment of other provinces. So we think that our partners should harmonize their programs, their interventions, and I think that will be very helpful to the health system in the DRC. Thank you for your attention, Mr. Professor, dear colleagues, for having listened to the experience in the integration of TB-HIV care in DRC. Thank you very much.
Merci Jean-Pierre pour cette excellente
présentation. For this excellent presentation. I'm sure there will be
nous avons peut-être une ou deux pour poser des questions quand il va passer.
But we still have maybe have a few minutes. I'm going to ask maybe to manage the rest of the time we have at our disposal. Any questions for Dr. Kubui?
On a very important topic, this issue. We've talked a lot in other sessions about this whole issue of harmonization of drugs. So I really congratulate him and the Democratic Republic of Congo for putting together this kind of effort in a very difficult post-war situation. I don't see any questions for him. So, with that, je vous remercie, Jean-Pierre. I would like to end by saying you've now heard the experience of basically what the union is doing and will do regarding the integration of collaborative TB-HIV activities from the point of view of the TB patient, which we know in areas such as this part of the world, there's so much co-infection of the TB patients with HIV. So I thank you for your attention, and we hope that this has been enlightening to you. Thank you very much.